Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders who share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite athletes to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe to The Rundown. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
One of my buddies was like, hey, listen, you know, we see you're quitting smoking. That's awesome. You know, we started running. That was like literally something they were like, you know, we started running and we've heard running's really good to help with the cravings. You should start running.
On this episode of The Rundown, I'll speak with my friend Scott Gold. He traded in smoking and being overweight for a life of running and good health. It's now 9 years later, and he hasn't looked back. He's now done 50 races, including 12 marathons and 23 ultras, which is a feat in itself. We also get into his attempts of the Leadville 100, a 100-mile trail race across the high altitude and extreme terrain of the Colorado Rockies. He explains how it's not just about the running, but simply the will to keep moving forward. This episode is brought to you by Movember, a cause that is most recognized for its mustache and has evolved into so much more. In fact, you don't even need to grow a mustache to participate. Keep your beard, grow or don't. The most important thing is raising awareness to fight the four main causes: mental health, suicide prevention, prostate cancer, and testicular cancer. Getting involved is easy. Sign up or donate at Movember.com to help change the face of men's health. Just going to run through some news with you real quick. The Chicago Marathon was on October 7th. Mo Farah won that race with a time of 2 hours and 5 minutes and 11 seconds. Really impressive. Our very own Mel Morand finished 9th overall amongst females and first female Canadian in that race. She ran a time of 2 hours 34 minutes. So that's really impressive. Get to train with her sometimes in Montreal, and she's a super person, so really happy for her. Today, our guest is Scott Gold, and he completed that marathon as well. It's his 8th consecutive Chicago Marathon, so a little shout out to him. That's an Ironman streak in itself. Coming up on October 21st, the Toronto Marathon. I've been training hard for that one. Been a run-focused year for me, so no triathlon there. I hope that all the attention to running is going to pay off. I'd like to do a nice time. I'm going to have a good time. My family's from Toronto, so going to be visiting with my grandmothers, and for sure going to do some carb loading there. No better place to do that. And that's coming up this weekend, so super stoked for that one. And also happening in Montreal, the Ghost Race, sponsored by Lululemon and Strava. It's happening right now and going till October 21st. What that is, it's a mapped out course on Strava, 8 kilometers on Mount Royal in Montreal. It's an out and back. And the beauty of that is you can run it anytime you want. You can run it solo. You can run in the morning. You can run at night. You can run with a friend. There's probably going to be an event as well happening for that, so you can get together with runners from the city and run it all together. And it's, if you're listening to this episode live, it's not too late to sign up for that one. So go to Strava, sign up, and join Lululemon Ghost Race MTL, the letters MTL. A feel-good story out of Nike. Last week, it was announced that Justin Galagos, a student of Oregon University, just signed his first professional contract with Nike. It's a super inspiring story by Galagos, who was born with cerebral palsy. In fact, he is the first Nike-sponsored athlete with that condition. So it's really, really cool what Nike's doing and bringing him on. His dream is actually to break 2 hours on the half marathon. And actually this past April, he did his first one and he completed it in a time of 2 hours, 3 minutes, and 49 seconds, which is really awesome. He was so close, and we have no doubts that he will get that done maybe as soon as next year. That's all for the news. Thank you very much. Gotta run. Hey, Scott, welcome to The Rundown. Happy to have you today.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Just to give a little bit, you know, context, like kind of how we met, it was it probably like 2 years ago for the Boston Marathon, I think, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's been, yeah, almost 2 years. So April 2017 for the, for the Boston race, we were hanging out with Lululemon.
Yeah, we were, I think, really fortunate to have that kind of involvement at that stage. It was kind of a one-off, I think, event, which was pretty special, where they, to my recollection, like brought in all the runners kind of associated with them that had qualified for the Boston Marathon. So,
okay.
Because, I mean, I'm from Montreal. You're from, well, originally Chicago, I guess. So,
yeah, originally from Chicago, but now Colorado. But yeah, I mean, that was an incredible experience. I think I've talked to people because I was like super spoiled where I was like, yeah, I wanted to go run Boston, which was already a fantastic experience and privilege. But then I was like, yeah, and I got Lululemon to kind of like carry me the whole way. Like we were hotel right down there by Fenway, like everything just handed to us. I was like, I don't know if I could go back now.
Right? I don't know if I deserve this.
Totally.
Like completely treated like rock stars, which was a really cool thing. And was that your first one?
My first Boston? Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, I had spent like 3 years trying to qualify for Boston almost exclusively. I mean, I had done some racing intermittently, but it took me a while to get a qualifying time. So it was definitely for me a huge reward. Like you said, like we were totally treated like rock stars. And, you know, I was like, yeah, like I did this. Like I finally got here and like I'm really here now.
Yeah, and that's it's such a special place, and I don't think, I mean, that was my first one as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just like realizing where you are, trying to take it all in. Like that weekend was obviously an exception; it was jam packed. But just being like fully grateful for being able to have that experience, you know?
Oh my gosh, yeah, and I think, you know, for me, I still hold it up there with one of the best race experiences I've ever had. I mean, I was literally just talking with one of my coworkers today, and she ran Boston, I think 2012, and then the bombing year, which I think was 2013. Mm-hmm. And kind of, you know, she was starting to go into how she was waiting at the start finish line, like a block down from her friend. And she, you know, she was telling about the whole experience, and I was literally talking to her about it today about how, you know, I really want to go back, and how that, I don't know what pre-Boston bombing marathon energy was like, but certainly going there post-bombing, you really see the town coming alive, because not only were they already into it and behind the whole race, but the, you know, obviously the tragedy gives it that extra level of like, we're all here together today and, you know, representing a lot. And I think that really fed it for me. I mean, when I made that turn on Boylston for the first time, I was like, I was emotional straight up. Like I could not believe how intense it was finishing that race. Did you feel the same way?
Yeah. It's just, I mean, yeah. I mean, when I finished my first marathon, I kind of had I did it feeling, you know, that,
yeah.
That wave of emotion that comes over you after completing a marathon. And then, yeah, like you're saying, the energy that you feel, it's almost like I blacked out, like, cause the cheers were so loud, you know, you're kind of smothered in this like emotion, love, there's passion, you know, they're so patriotic. They show up rain or shine kind of thing. And I don't think you can ever really appreciate it fully until you go, you know. It's one of those,
yeah,
it's one
no,
of those things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's definitely you've got one of those you gotta be there moments. So and I think, you know, I thought that year for you know, with all of it culminating with, you know, getting hooked up with Lululemon and just all of that really made it a great finish to the weekend. So yeah, and we were fortunate to connect and obviously stay connected, which has been also fantastic. You know, I've taken a lot of good connections away from that, even being in different countries.
Right. And I've even sent a few people your way, right?
Yeah.
I haven't come to visit yet, but.
Well, we got to get you out here, man. You're going to love it out here.
But I mean, that's the beauty of you find, like, do you do that on a regular basis? Do you get to connect with runners? Like, or is it more like, I feel like in Montreal anyways, like, you know, every time I go out and run with a group, I kind of get that same, the same high of just meeting new people, like, which Boston gave us. But do you do that as well on a regular basis? Or
yeah, you know, I think, you know, the Boston experience, at least for me, and I think for all of us, really was special. I think the way we were all put together as a crew of people kind of maybe helped facilitate some of that relationship building a little bit more intensely, which is great. You know, I think that throughout all of my running and all, you know, where I've raced all over the country and all over the world, you know, I think that's something that I seek out personally. You know, I think for me, the community and the relationships that you make with the people while you're out there doing this stuff, it tends to last, because I think runners are built a little bit different. You know, I think we all look for that. We look for that sense of community. So whether it is maybe just the running groups, you know, and you find you meet your new people, I think that's definitely a part of it. But I think when you're out there racing, and especially if you're doing like ultra distance racing, you know, you're all out there suffering together. And I think there's a lot of bonding that goes on while you're out there having, you know, a presumably tough or miserable time sometimes. And then there's just some person who rolls up on the trail next to you and is like, hey, how you feeling? And, you're like, I'm feeling like crap. How are you? They're like, yeah, I'm feeling like crap too. Like, you want to hike for 10 miles together and talk about nothing? And I don't know, that for me breeds a lot of relationships. And I've certainly been fortunate to meet a lot of people all over the country. And, you know, now, you know, especially with you in Canada and some people that I've met in Italy before, you know, it's just, it's an incredible community. So I seek it out. I don't know if that's what everybody's doing, but I definitely felt that, you know, especially at a place like Boston, we were, it was like, intensified and amplified.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it takes running high to a new level, you know. It's like, yeah, those, like, that's what makes me so happy, is to join this community of not only runners, it's having that bond with not only your own community but around the world, you know, like coming to the US to race Boston. I'll be racing New York next year, which I'm super stoked about. Yeah, got that qualifying time under wraps.
What
finally,
do they require for New York? Is it like a 3:15 or faster, or is it more intense?
It's more intense. It's for, if you want to qualify with a marathon, it's a for myself, it's a 2:53. And but you can qualify with the New York half marathon in March, and that's a 1:21. Yeah.
So what was your qualifying time?
118.
Oh my gosh, really? Was that at the New York half then, or did you do it? So okay,
yeah,
sweet. Yeah, exactly. 118. Dude, yeah. You're flying out there. That's
trying.
Oh my god, you're not trying. You're doing
it. That was prep for Boston this year. It was part of the kind of the programming and kind of getting that, you know, getting ready for Boston number two, which was again another completely different experience. Not having you guys there was obviously, you know, it was not the same, but also the weather conditions were just horrendous.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, my God. I mean, I was watching on TV. First of all, my first thought was like, this is an ultra runner's race now. I'm like, being out in the pouring rain and in miserable conditions, like, put a headlamp on me and like, we're there. but yeah, yeah, no.
Give me some Gore-Tex.
Seriously, it's like, yo, let's get the rain jacket out. We'll do this. Give me the hiking poles. Like, we're going. But yeah, that was definitely a different race. Did you find it considerably harder? I mean, I don't know how you usually train. Like, are you usually getting out there on those less than ideal days?
You can appreciate those cold winters coming from Chicago, for sure. I'm sure, but it hardens you as a runner. It gives you that mental strength, capacity, you know, when you're going out in minus 30, that's Celsius for Canada. I don't know what the conversion is for you.
I know where that is. Yeah. Okay.
if you've gone to Europe, then
yeah, I mean, you're right at like, you know, at zero for So I got you. It's cold. It's real cold.
Which is what Boston was this year, which was absolutely insane. But running in the winter certainly helps. I have no choice but to prep out here outside. I hate the treadmill, so that's. When people were struggling with the cold a little bit, I was pretty used to it. You know, you throw the wind in there, though, it's like another curveball.
Sure. But you're like, I'm from Canada. You're like, I got this.
But you saw that in the times too, right? The female runners, I think the winner, Dez, she was at, if I'm not mistaken, like 220. At 240.
She was like 240 something, actually, which is definitely considerably slower for top females.
Right, and even the guys were much slower too. So felt decent with my time. You know, I was like, I was okay. I was really at peace with it, and just happy it was over. It was more the hardest part was staying warm after the race, because you're just standing there, everyone's trying to get to gear.
Yeah, just going through the chute, trying not to freeze.
Yeah, trying to fend off the hypothermia, you know, after you run a marathon. The other thing. I want to ask you, so like, you know, you're a marathoner, so clearly you have some experience with running. Like, where did this all start? Like, how was your childhood growing up? Were you running and, you know, at a young age?
Or yeah. Yeah. So it, definitely not a traditional path. So I played sports when I was a kid. I played baseball and that was probably the extent of it. Like maybe some basketball with my friends, but I was an overweight kid my whole life, actually. So kind of the short-ish timeline of it is basically, you know, I was kind of overweight my whole life. And then I kind of hit a growth spurt while I was in high school. And I, you know, got to be the towering 5'8" that I am now. And, lost a bunch of weight, kind of just grew into myself, I guess, for lack of a better term. But I spent high school doing the exact opposite of running. I smoked cigarettes. I was a pack-a-day smoker for a while, partied. I was in a band in high school. I did everything but run. You know, I was on the total other end of the spectrum. It didn't necessarily bother me at that time. You know, I was like 16, 17 years old. I was just having a good time. You know, I never, looking back now, I'm 31. You know, I didn't ever think I would be doing what I'm doing now, or living the life that I'm living. So, you know, kind of the way that it got started for me was I was 20, 22. So I started working in restaurants, like pretty much all through college. And then thereafter, I kind of just kept going. I studied music in university, and you got out of college and you're like, okay, great. I have a bachelor's in music. So I'm no idea what I'm going to do with this. And you're like, shit. Like, whoops. Kind of missed on that one. So worked in the restaurant business, you know, in the restaurant industry. I don't know how familiar you are with it. Have you ever worked in the hospitality industry?
Yeah, I think we have all done it. It's, yeah. Like busboy and, you know, waiter and totally. This kind of thing. Just a good way to make money.
Yeah,
as a student,
and, you
right?
know, it's easy money, and you can have fun. So, you know, that lifestyle, perpetuated itself for me very quickly. Where, you know, I was 21, and I'm working in downtown Chicago, and you know, it's like, let's get off, let's go drink, you know, yada yada. So I was kind of living this life of just working in the hospitality industry, partying all the time, you know, sleeping in late and working late, and so that was like, you know, through college, and I was like 21, 22, and then 23 was kind of like a very pivotal time for me. And this is, you know, really where I started to look at myself. So, you know, for the background is like my family background kind of looks like this. And this is kind of some of like the deductions that I started making, where I was like, so both of my grandfathers, they both smoked, both of my mom's and my dad's side. So they were heavy, heavy smokers, heavy, heavy drinkers, both died of heart related illnesses. Then my my dad's brother, he was a very, very heavy smoker, you know, definitely an alcoholic. You know, my dad smoked, my dad drank, I smoked, I drank. My brother at the time, who was younger than me, he smoked and he, you know, was a partier. And I was kind of looking at this being like, we're all the same. We're all broken the same way. You know, we all take on the same habits and we have the same vices. And I was already at that time being like, you know, like somebody has to do something about this. Cause when I grew up, you know, like smoking cigarettes and drinking was very normalized. You know, my dad smoked, my parents very casually drank, you know, I think it was almost generational to some extent where that's just what people mm-hmm. would do, you know, and it was never really looked at. I mean, my parents always told me smoking was bad for me, but when I started smoking when I was 16 years old, it was like, well, we can't really tell you not to smoke because we smoke, you know. So it was one of those moments where I was like, okay, I guess I smoke now. So kind of to go back to what I was saying, so when I was like 23, my uncle, my dad's brother, he had become ill and he was very young. I think he was like 63 or 64. And he was ailing from smoking and drinking related illnesses. And most importantly, smoking, because he had COPD, you know, a chronic onset pulmonary disorder, which is basically from smoking. And he had emphysema. So, you know, you start to see somebody going through these, and they're awful diseases, but they're self-inflicted to an extent at the same time. So when I was, when I was at this age and I was kind of watching my uncle's health deteriorate, and to his eventual death, it's really kind of like, you know, it shook me. And I remember very, very specifically, there was a moment where he was, you know, hospitalized at the end stages of his life. And we were talking to the doctor and, you know, giving us prognosis on him. And the doctor made he gave us this example. He's like, okay, so here's how his breathing is right now. They basically said, imagine taking one of those plastic coffee stirrers. He's like, that's the only way he's getting air in and out. So I don't know if you can visualize that.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty, just got chills kind of thing.
You're suffocating, essentially, is what's happening.
Quite something.
Yeah. So I had this moment in my life where I kind of was looking at, you know, every guy in my history or in my family history, it was like, we all smoked, we all drank, we all died from it. And then I had this very, real experience of being close to my uncle while he was passing away. And I saw what the end of his life looked like. And, you know, I kind of literally made the decision almost right then and there. I said, listen, you know, I accept my mortality. You know, I know I'm going to die, but I don't want to die like that. You know, and I kind of knew that I could take control of certain things in my life in order to make those changes, to avoid what I was already seeing. You know, it was like one of those moments in a movie almost where it's like you saw your future. Like literally, it was like, I was like, that is going to be me in like 40 years if I don't change what I'm doing. So it was this huge, huge wake up call. It was really just this moment in time where I decided like, I want to do something about it. And I said, I'm like, you know what? I don't want my kids to grow up smoking. I don't want them to think that this is something that's okay. So I'm going to make the change and I'm going to be the one to start this right now. So literally just one day, I had my last hurrah. I smoked three packs. Okay. I went to a casino with a couple of my buddies. I smoked like three packs of cigarettes. I probably drank, you know, a ton of bourbon or whiskey. And then I woke up the next morning and it's been almost 9 years since I've had a cigarette. So that was like the cut, and it was quick because I was scared. Like, I'm not going to lie. I was scared about where my decisions were going to lead me later on in life. So now I've kind of like literally, you know, they talk about the 3-day hump, right? That's like the smokers, they got to get over the 3-day hump. So literally within the 3-day hump, one of my buddies, was like, hey, listen, you know, we see you're quitting smoking. That's awesome. you know, we started running. That was like literally something they were like, you know, we started running and we've heard running's really good to help with the cravings. You should start running. And that was kind of it. And literally I got over my 3-day hump. On day 4, I went and bought a pair of discounted running shoes. They were New Balances at one of like the discount shoe places that we have. And I went out for a run. And I didn't know what I was doing. And I think I ran maybe a quarter of a mile and I couldn't breathe. But that was where it started for me, at least with getting into it.
Right. And so like that, I mean, that's just crazy. You kind of went through that, and it takes something, unfortunately for some people, I think it takes a moment like that to make the switch. And it might be something that maybe over time, like it's a long time coming, but to come to all of a sudden, it's like, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's one of those, and I agree with you, you know, I think it's one of those moments. And I think we all unfortunately experience them where, you know, maybe you know somebody who's passed away, and especially who's maybe passed away even at a young age. And you have that very brief moment in time where you're like, you know what, like, I get it now. You like, you know, I don't know. Do you ever experience that where you're like, I understand things. Like I understand what's important all of a sudden. And, you know, you have that moment and then sometimes it goes away and then you just kind of go back to living your life. But I think that there's always something very important to learn there. And that was my moment to learn, like, this is not okay. don't do this anymore. Like just stop.
Yeah. I don't want that to be me. I want to move forward and make that positive change in my life.
So. Absolutely. I mean, that was kind of what started it. And I started running, and I hated it, actually, to be truthful with you. It was this thing that I kept putting myself through. I'm sorry, were you going to say something? Go for it.
No. I was just going to say, like, I'm just always curious, like, I know why I put myself through it. I don't know. I like to hear like why other people stuck with it.
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure if I can put my finger on it. I think the thing that I knew is that I knew it was good for me. I knew that everything I was doing was good for me and it was going to help me, because at the time my goals were very short-sighted. I was like, I just don't want to smoke cigarettes anymore. So whenever I have that craving, like I'd literally put my shoes on and go out the door. And whether I was like just running around the block or trying to do like, you know, 2 or 3 miles or wherever I was, it was like my defense against my my addiction, you know. And I that's something that I think I've really learned, or as I've talked to people and I've met people kind of going, you know, racing and meeting all these people, is that, you know, a lot of runners are addicts. And I think that that's a personality trait. You know, and it's like, it's a swapping of addiction essentially, because I'm not sure if you can really ever undo the fact that you're an addict. But you can find ways to help, you know, deal with it better. I don't know. Do you ever feel that way? Like, do you feel like you've had an addictive personality like in your past? Like,
I always say that, like, I'm the type, I can switch things on and off very quickly. So I don't think I have, I say this, I have an addictive personality for only good, healthy things.
That's good. So, that's good. You honed it really quickly. You're like, okay, I'm addicted to like fruits and vegetables and running.
Yeah. You know? So, I mean, I made a switch to a plant-based vegan diet a year ago. And I saw a couple documentaries and then it was like, I'm disgusted. I'm changing right now. And that was it. You know, just to give you an example, like that's just like how I operate. I flick it like a switch and I'm off on a new pattern. If it's good for me, I'm doing it.
So have you been over a year now plant-based?
Over a year.
And you've been feeling, so when I met you in Boston, you weren't all the way plant-based then.
No, okay. I was not. I definitely wasn't. Okay. No. Because I made the switch in 2017.
Okay. How do you feel? Like, how's that been? Like, are you loving it?
When I met you, I knew that you and Hannah were. at that time, and I think definitely planted the seed
awesome.
For me. You know, so it's like, again, like those connections that you make. So I think you can learn something from everybody, you know. So watching you and Hannah, and like how, and for people that don't know, Hannah's your girlfriend. So.
Everybody knows now, Dan.
That, just no, making no, sure, no. You know, put a stamp on it.
So it's mine to own now. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, go ahead.
But that, you know, that was possible. And then, like, I guess over a year later, watched a few documentaries, like I said, and then, you know, made the switch, and I feel great. I honestly feel like I have more energy. I feel really in tune with my body. And like, let's face it, when you're running marathons or anything higher than that, I mean, even lesser distances, like in workouts or whatever, you need to find those sources of energy to kind of get you through that, which is key. So, but yeah, trying to kind of bring this around, it's like for the good of me, like running's good. I keep doing it. I'm obsessed with it. But it is a good thing.
Right. So totally. Yeah.
That's kind of, and like, how long have you been, cause you are also, you know, you guys are vegan as well. So how long has that been?
Yeah.
For you guys?
So I'm, just a little over 4 years now. And I think Hannah, is probably just a year behind me, because she was a vegetarian when we met. So obviously that was a happy connection when we first started dating. So for her, it was like, well, I'm already vegetarian. And then she just cut out, you know, dairy essentially. And that kind of was an easy transition for her. But yeah, so we're like 3 and 4 years respectively. And, it works for us. And I think the more I open my ears, and the more I listen, and the more I'm out there, you know, diet's, you know, extremely controversial. And it's a subject that, you know, I only ever like to give my personal accords on. And I think there was a moment in time where I was like, I was the crusader, you know, I was like, what? Like, you're having a cheeseburger? Like, sit down. We're going to talk for 20 minutes and just, you know, trying to impose sometimes on people. You know, and now I'm kind of like, well, I'm like, you know, are you happy? You know, and then I can, if you want to hear what I have to say, like, I'm more than happy to share with you, you know, like my experiences and, you know, why I did it all. But I've personally refrained, or I was maybe trying to like recruit you, Justin. So sorry. Okay. So there's one. I recruited my girlfriend and my brother and my mother. But outside of that, I think I've laid pretty low. But it feels great. And like for me, it was this thing where I had somebody who was telling me, a buddy of mine who I had raced with, was like, you should really try it. You should really try it. Going back to, you know, where I was when I started quitting smoking, you know, even before I quit, I was already starting to be like, I feel like I need to eat a little healthier, because when I was in college, I packed on a ton of weight. Like, people are like the freshman 15 or whatever. I was like the freshman 50. Like I went from being like 150, 160. I think at my heaviest, I was like 220. And I'm only 5'8". So you're like a ball, essentially. You look like a...
Well, we're the same height, so I can't imagine being, you know, geez, what is that? Without giving away, like 50 pounds,
yeah,
let's say.
Yeah, no, seriously. It's a lot of weight. So yeah, that was already something I was doing, where I was like, okay, so I cut out like red meat first. So like, somebody I knew was like, listen, like, if you're trying, like, don't eat red meat. Red meat's bad for you. I'm like, okay, like, I'll try it out. So started eating like more fish and chicken and things like that. And then it was like this, you know, very quickly being like, okay, well, I don't really want to drink milk anymore. And, you know, you start hearing about stuff like that. So it literally took me like, I think, 4 years to become vegan, from when I started being like, I should start paying attention to what I eat, not even with the intention of ever going vegan. I just don't think I ever had any of the information. And I was literally getting like secondhand info from people being like, oh yeah, like, don't do that. And then all of a sudden I'm like, well, here we are, veganism. So, but literally it was like, I was signed up for this, it's a 24-hour race. I don't know if you've ever heard of these things, but it's like fairly masochistic in a sense, where it's basically a timed race. And it's just like, you run around a 1 mile loop course, wherever it is, and you do as many miles as you can in 24 hours. So
that was
something I signed up for. And my buddy was like kind of pushing me at the time. He's like, yeah, he's like, you know, you should go vegan. You should just try it out. So I did, I think like 6 weeks before the race, I was like, okay, I'm going to commit to the idea. I'm going to commit to the race. And I ended up doing like 97 miles in 24 hours. But that wasn't really what stuck me on it. What stuck me on it was that after I did this whole ridiculous race that I'll never do ever again, it was that like 3 or 4 days after the race, I was like going on 8 mile runs already and I felt totally fine. So it was really the recovery part of it, of being plant-based, that made it stick with me, where I was like, well, you know, I'm out here, I'm trying to train hard, I'm trying to race hard, you know, I'm trying to get after it all the time. And if I could literally go out and do that and then 3 or 4 days later feel ready to rock again, that's a huge advantage in my opinion. So that was my sticking point.
Of course. Yeah. Why not? You stick. I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Seriously, I was like, okay, I'm like, you got me. And that was another thing too, though, you know, I mean, I think kind of similar to you, where it was like, once I made the choice though, I haven't ever backed up on it. Like, I haven't ever been like, oh, well, you know, I had a slice of cheese pizza out with my friends. Like, I'm all the way, you know. And I mean, maybe something slipped under my radar that I had no control over, but I have never consciously been like, well, you know, like forget it for today or anything like that. So I think I get how you are, where you're like, okay, like as soon as I said yes, then I'm in, and now we're hardcore, you know, all the way.
Right. And also like, what was there any, is there any food as a part, and I hate the word diet, yeah, but as a part of that meal plan or prep, or is there a post race meal that you go after that helps you with that recovery?
So
specifically,
you know, not specifically for me though, it's just, it's the smoothies. So, you know, I've got a Vitamix blender, and like that is for me when it comes time to recover, it's like blend all of the greens and all the fruit you possibly can and drink as much of it as you can as fast as you can.
just get it in.
Yeah. Because that's for me what gives me the vitality, right? The vibrance. It's like literally almost being like high on like all the nutrients from all the green vegetables and all the fruit and stuff. So typically, a good hearty green smoothie, or even something that I've discovered recently, which is just pureed watermelon. Have you ever done this?
I haven't done it.
Okay, so this is your, I don't know, well, it was 100 degrees here today in Boulder, by the way. So
it's
hot here. But next summer, or whenever it's warm, you blend up, just literally cut a watermelon in half, just start scooping it into a blender. Don't put anything else in it except for just like a little bit of lime juice or even lemon juice. And just blend that up, and it is so refreshing on a hot day. And it actually has some benefits for muscle recovery. So that's been another one of like the, when it's in season, like we'll hit the watermelon juice hard.
Very cool.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I'm always looking for like new tips and tricks and like that. I think that, when I remember what I was going to say now, is that, you know, people always ask me, is it hard? Is it hard to make, like, is it hard to be vegan? Is it hard to be plant-based? And I said, it's not hard because I made the decision. No one's forcing me or putting a gun to my head. If it's my choice, I can go to the grocery store, get all the things I need. So I get my proteins, mm-hmm. I get my, and I think it's just, maybe it's just a lack of education, because I don't know fully if people understand that you can get all the protein you need from a plant-based diet.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I agree with you. I think it's partially a lack of education. I think people are afraid, you know, I think it's a question I've posed a lot to people. It's like, why is everybody so afraid of, you know, changing what they eat? And there's been a lot of people who've discussed it. You know, one of the big things is like, it's tradition, you know, like a lot of cultures, a lot of religions, you know, it's rooted in like meals and in symbolic meals, even sometimes. And like, you know, certainly, like I'm Jewish, and there is a ton of symbolic foods that you eat all throughout the year that are all certainly not vegan. You know, it's like, I mean, and that's just how people grow up. So it's like, I feel like sometimes when you're attacking what they're eating, you're like attacking who they are a little bit, where you're like, oh my God, like, but what are we going to do on Christmas? Like holiday ham, you know? And people like, don't like that. It's like, leave me alone. Like leave my tradition. Like this is my comfort zone. So it's interesting. I don't think I know enough about it, but it's definitely, it's interesting. And I think if you ask people why sometimes they don't ever have a good answer. It's like, well, why don't you want to do that? And they're like, well, you know, I just like bacon. It's like, if you, yeah. I feel like it's my number one answer. I'm like, it's, well, like, what is it? It's like, well, like my bacon, dude. It's like, okay, well, all right. Like, that's it though. It's like, it's all selfish reasons. I like this. I want that. So, you know, there's a whole road to run down there, but, it's not hard. And it goes, you know, and it's also like what your mom tells you when you grow up. It's like, eat your fruits and vegetables. And like somehow you forget that, where it's like, yeah, that's the good stuff. And people just have to remember to like, that's how you're supposed to eat. Like your mom was always making sure you did it and she was doing it for a reason, maybe like unconsciously or subconsciously, but it was like, yeah, because that's what's good for you. So it's not hard. And, you know, if you make it simple, it's actually really easy and it's cheap too, if you're really good about it.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. I find like I've been just saving a ton of money just because of the way, like I'm changing the way I eat and my grocery bills are a lot less expensive. Mm-hmm. It's feel good. It's healthy. I'm running well. Like you say, recovering well. I don't, you know, it's a new world for me because I've been used to eating the same way for so long. It's just, it's really eye-opening and it's actually awesome. But I just, what do you eat? Like, I know you're doing like ultra runs and stuff like that. So actually, before I get into that, I just want to know more. Like, so when did the racing start? Like, how did your progression go from a pack-a-day smoker to... I'm going to run with my buddies and barely be able to breathe to, okay, now this is becoming enjoyable. Where do I go from here?
Yeah. So, it was a pretty fast timeline, I would say. So, November of 1 year, I'm going to get my dates a little mixed up, but basically November of 1 year, I quit. And then that following October, so less than a year, I ran my first race and my first marathon. So basically the way that looked was is that I spent all this time running and I just started getting into it. So I did have a moment probably like a couple months after I started running where my buddy lived like 6 miles away from my house. So I was like, and I was kind of like just working up to this distance. And he's like, you know, what are you going to do today? I'm like, you know, I'm going to go for a run, but then we can hang out. And he literally was like, well, I'm like, so you can run to my house. He's like, I think it's only a couple miles. So like I got online and looked, I'm like, okay, yeah, it's 6 miles. Like I think I could do this. So I ran to my buddy's house. And the reason I emphasize this specific 6 mile-ish run was because, there was this moment where I connected with my running and I actually enjoyed what I was doing because I had built up that base where all of a sudden it wasn't necessarily like a grind. You know, I wasn't gasping for air at this point now. And I was like, man, I can take myself places. Like I can go explore and be out there and, you know, go places. Like I'm running, like usually I'd drive to his house. Like now I can run to his house. And that was very empowering to me for whatever reason. I just felt, you know, maybe like I had the control to do this or I had the ability now. So that's when my mind started to switch. So I started to like keep pushing my mileage throughout, you know, that spring then and that summer. Actually, I think I ran to his house in the wintertime. It was freaking cold out. But so I kept like getting the mileage up. And all of a sudden, I'm like going out for like 12 and 13 mile runs and stuff. And my same buddy who was like, you know, you should try running, was like, hey, do you want to run a marathon? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. So we got in the lottery for the Chicago Marathon. We both got in. And it was like kind of all she wrote. So it's a symbolic race. So I'm like, this is going to be my 8th year in a row this October running the Chicago Marathon. I've done it every year since I've started running. So, you know, I'm trying to streak it now, but it's my homecoming, back to my hometown. But at the same time, you know, it always for me symbolizes like, again, like another pivotal point in my life where it was like, this was my first marathon that I did. And it was 8 years ago to this day, or will be 8 years ago. So yeah, that was really kind of it. And I trained and I got on like a Hal Higdon program, and it was just like, you know, I had a friend and I think that helped out a little bit. Someone to be like, you ever heard of these things called goos? Like, yeah, I think I gotta go buy some now, you know?
Like, I qualify.
Right? Like, I have a purpose all of a sudden, you know? And then like you get like wrapped up in the subculture, and that's like a whole nother part of it too, where it's like, you know, you start like reading, you know, you get your Runner's World mag, and then you start like looking at the articles, and you start learning about all the players, you know, all the elite people, and then like all the races you can do, and it, like, you get so absolved in this intense and gratifying culture of like, let's go out there and let's run really far and, you know, let's have a blast while we do it. So, that October, I guess I should preface. So, you know, I was training for all this, and I think through my, you know, quasi intellectual query of like, let's learn more about running, there was a specific movie that I came across, which is called, it was about, do you know who Tony Kropitschka is? Have you heard that name?
No.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So Tony Kropitschka is a boulder based runner, and he's really like kind of one of the flagship ultra marathon mountain life kind of dudes. And he was very much in the subculture of running. You know, he was publicized and followed and written about and all this stuff. And definitely Google him, because he's done some crazy stuff. He actually just broke a record like of a FKT here in Boulder today. It's like the Boulder Duathlon. Essentially, you bike to a 14er and then you run up it and then you run down it and then you bike back to Boulder. It's something like 60 or 70 miles total. And anyways, going back, there was a movie that was crazy. It's so crazy, dude. Like,
what's a 14er?
Okay. Yeah. 14er. So 14er, you know what? I apologize. I forget. There's like some very specific like Colorado terminology. So 14er is any mountain that's over 14,000 feet above sea level. So in Colorado, we've got 54 of them. Some people will say 53. There's like one in question, but yeah. So there's these big mountains. It's the big Rocky Mountains, and you can summit all of them actually. Obviously, but some are easier than others. Long's Peak, which is the one that's very close to us, it's only probably in the car, you know, maybe like about a 45-minute drive to the trailhead. But then it's a pretty intense climb. It's about, I think, to the top and back from the trailhead, you're like 13, 14 miles with maybe like 6,000 feet of elevation gain. Do I have to convert that into kilometers? No, okay. It's like 22K, I think, with about like, you know, 2,500 meters, or like 2,000 ish meters. So,
significant.
So anyways, going back. So there was this movie that was playing, and it was like a really, really, kind of like indie film. It was called 1,000 Miles Under the Colorado Sky. And it was basically following Tony Kropitschka on his journey and his prep to run the Leadville 100, where he ran, I guess, 1,000 miles in like the 3 months leading up to the race, which is a ton. I'm like watching this movie and I'm like, wait a minute, like what? I'm like, people run like 50 miles and like 100 miles. So I got really interested in it, and I was like, well, that looks awesome. I'm going to do that. So ran the Chicago Marathon in October, and then that following April, I ran a 50-mile race, and that was kind of all she wrote.
You're mental.
I mean, certainly yes, but
those are your first two races,
yeah.
Marathon.
Yeah,
and,
So that was like boom, boom, like got the 50-miler done. It was awful. I was running on trails, muddy, muddy, muddy trails. I was wearing like road shoes. I was like totally unprepared. I can show you pictures. Literally, it's just like, I didn't know what I was doing, but I was out there doing it. It was raining. Oh God. It was like central, it was like central Illinois. It was a mess, but yeah. So that was really, I just was like, I want to do this. Like this shit looks cool. Like I want to get out there. And, yeah, that was kind of the launch pad, if you will.
Crazy. And now you've done like 50 races, 12 marathons, 23 ultra marathons, like all this time later.
Yeah. I was just looking at that a couple days ago, actually, because I was like, man, I'm going to think I'm going to take an off season a little bit this year because, just in the wintertime and just get prepped up for 2019. Yeah. I mean, I just started throwing myself into everything. I mean, there was a year, I think 2015, maybe 2016. I think I ended up doing like, two marathons and like eight ultras and one half in a calendar year. And I was just like, it was like, if there was a race and there was a plane to it, I was going essentially. I was like, yeah, all right, let's go. Let's just do it. But it was a journey, you know? And I think, that was another big part of it. It was like, oh my God, I get to, like, there were places that I went to race with the intention of seeing that I'd never been to before. I was like, I've never been to California. Now I've been to California like 8 times for racing, you know, and I got to see San Francisco and LA and Sonoma. And I started to go to all these amazing places, and it brought me out to Colorado, in Montana and Georgia and, Tennessee and all these, like all over our, you know, all over America. I was like, I've seen almost our entire country now. And it's been an awesome ride because, I got to do it, but it was my excuse. I was like, screw it. Like, I'm going to just go. Like, if there's a race and it looks like fun, then sign me up and buy the plane ticket and here we go.
Right. Yeah. And that's the great thing about running too. Like, you get to see all these amazing places and you get to see them like not like other people can see them because you're on foot. Like, a lot of these races take you to really cool neighborhoods. And like, I mean, I haven't ran the New York Marathon, but the half itself is just so special. You know, you're running through Times Square. Like, this is like one of the busiest, I'm sure one of the busiest streets in any city. And it's shut down for you.
Yeah, like, totally. Especially in New York, man. Like, you got to be pumped for that one. Like, that's going to,
oh, yeah.
That's supposed to be one of the best, I've heard. Next. The boroughs, right? It's all about the boroughs.
Exactly. So yeah, I'm super pumped for that one and plan to run. I really want to run Chicago as well. Like, I want to do all the majors. So
nice.
Chicago definitely falls in there. We'll have to run your ninth or 10th edition of that race together.
I'll be out there, man, every year. No matter what, even if I got to walk it on 1 year, I'll be out there. Yeah. Love to have you out. That'd be a blast. But yeah, you got to be stoked for New York. You're going to try and go do like Berlin and London and Tokyo too, or is that the other ones?
Yeah, so it's you have all of them. So it's Chicago, mm-hmm. New York, Boston, obviously, and then London, Tokyo, and Berlin. So I'll do the lottery. Berlin's actually next weekend,
or okay,
this coming weekend actually, the 16th, I believe.
Okay.
So I have a friend who's going to be running
wow.
that, and right after that, I'll sign up for the lottery to try and get into that one. And
is it hard to get?
So hopefully next. I think it's like everything else.
Okay.
You sign up for the lottery, put your name in, kind of thing, and that's kind of how it goes. You know,
for sure.
But just want to like just go and try. Like the great thing about running is you just put your shoes on, and you know, even if you're not racing, it's a beautiful way to see. To see cities and see different countries.
Oh my gosh, yeah. We were just in, I was just in Paris and in London with Hannah this spring, and we ran around the cities, you know, like our first day. It was like, let's just go for a run, you know, we'll get lost, we'll find our way, we'll maybe stumble upon something cool. Yeah, I've done it in a couple countries. It's totally the best way to see it.
For sure. And was Hannah also a runner when you met her, or is this something that it became an infection that you?
You know, there's going to be a lot of people in my life who are going to love that term. They're like, Scott's like a disease. So like Hannah ran, she was certainly athletic, but she didn't necessarily run, or like, I should, I should backpedal on that. If you run, you're a runner. I hate when, at least personally, I don't know if you get this. People are.
I say the same thing. Okay. Scott. You took the words out of my mouth. If you put one foot in front of the other, if you run, walk, you are a runner. There's no, you know, people are like, oh, I'm not a runner. It's like, I used to say that about triathlon.
Yeah.
Like, and then someone's like, do you swim, bike, and run? I'm like, yeah. So he's like, you're a triathlon. Yeah, you're a triathlete. Yeah. Sorry, excuse me.
Totally. Yeah. And I get this all the time too, because I do the ultra races. They're like, oh my God, like you're running a marathon. That must not be like anything for you. It must be like a walk in the park. I'm like, I got some news for you. Have you ever run a marathon? Yeah, it's really hard still. Like, there's nothing easy about it. I don't care how many ultras you've done. Like, towing the line at a marathon is tough. Right. So yeah, she started getting into it. So now she's done two marathons, one mountain marathon. So it was 27 miles. It was out in Leadville with like 6,800 feet. So convert back to meters. What is that? It's like about like a little over like 2,200 meters a climb. A big, big mountain race. And she finished that. And then she ran Chicago and she's going back to Chicago and she just did another mountain race. So yes, I have infected.
Sure. But it's nice you guys can do that together as a couple, you know. I don't know if you ever like envision that as, you know, a relationship, you know, like
I think it helps, you know. I certainly would love her regardless, but the fact that, you know, we could take weekend trips, and that's really what our summer's been just jam-packed with. It was like every Friday, like load up the truck, like let's go out in the mountains camping, doing big runs in the mountains, you know, partying a little bit, you know, like it definitely helps. Whereas if she had drastically different interests, like I'm not sure what an other, like if she's like, no, like I need to go do blah, like yeah, there'd be tension, but yeah, it helps. It definitely helps.
And she gets you a lot more too, I'm sure, like the kind of commitment you have to put in for training. Like I know you just attempted Leadville for the second time. Like what the hell does training for a 100-miler look like?
Yeah.
And like, what's that experience like? I want to know, you know, it's such an intense distance, and I know that's a hell of a race to try and go after, but to go after it twice, it's like,
yeah,
you know, what was round one for you like?
Yeah. So, you know, it's been elusive for me, and it's been tough because, you know, I haven't, it took me up until, you know, last year to really take a stab at the 100-mile distance. You know, I've learned something both times that I've been out there now. And I think I'll preface the whole thing with saying, you know, I don't have the desire to run 100 miles, but I do have the desire to run 100-mile races, specific ones, that being, so, you know, Leadville was obviously one of those. You know, the training is, it's interesting. For me, after all the years of running, and I was talking to my buddy about this because he was training alongside me, and he's like, oh, like, should we go on this? Like, should we do this run? And I'm like, listen, I'm like, there's no one run that's going to prepare you for this race. There's no one anything that's going to prepare you. And truthfully, it's really not about running to finish a 100-mile race. The training really needs to be mental. And I think that that's something that's really hard to replicate. I think that you've got to have raced a lot in order to understand what it takes to really finish one of these. And I haven't. So maybe I don't know yet. And for me, it's very much a learning process right now. But what I will say is that the one thing that I have learned is that you've got to really, really, really want it. Because when it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you've been running for 23 hours and you feel like you just want to collapse, there's no amount of weight room or biking or anything really that's going to make you choose to continue. That's all in your head. So people will joke a lot. They'll say, you know, ultra running, it's 90% mental and the other 10% is in your head. And it's really true, because if you convince yourself that you can do it, then you can do it. And that applies, I think, to everything potentially in life. That could be, you know, a broader brushstroke of things. But, you know, the training for me was really just about being at elevation, especially for Leadville. You know, you're at 10,000 to 12,000 feet the whole way. It's relentless because at that elevation, you can't keep fluid in you. Like, your body is just constantly being dehydrated. Your calories are being eviscerated. So it's literally like, you know, you're against all odds constantly. So it was a lot of time at elevation. And for me, it was a lot of just introspective, you know, thinking about, do I want this? Do I want to be out there? And I did, and I do, but it's going to take a little bit of change for me, I think, to finish it, because like I said, you know, it's mental. It has nothing to do with your physical conditioning, because the fittest people in the world can go out there. But if you're not mentally tough and fit and ready, you'll break, and you'll break early. So it's interesting. You know, it's interesting because you are stripped so far down. I mean, you are literally just like this amoeba of a person just being like rolled in and out of aid stations. Like, and you know, right. I got my, you know, and Hannah, you know, she's the most badass crew chief member. I mean, she had whole, you know, was carting around four people and supporting me and all of it. And it's like, there was a point earlier in the race where I was like, I'm done. And she just looked at me and she's like, get your shit on and get the fuck out there. And I'm just like, okay. Like, you know, cause it's not like, you can't even make a good decision sometimes. And that's why like a crew is important. So it's a production. It certainly is a production. So yeah, we just got to keep knocking on the door right now. And, but yeah, it's otherworldly. It's really, really is. And for the people who go out there and do this and they do it all the time, you know, intense kudos. I like running 100Ks.
Yeah, like
100Ks are good. You can get done and still go home and sleep in your own bed.
I don't even want to think about it, to be honest.
Yeah, like, come on, we'll get you out there. I mean, there's tons of races up by you, right? Like, there's got to be tons of ultra races. I don't know what's near Montreal, though. A lot of them are out like Vancouver, but do you guys have like ultra trails out there?
We just had one. It was the Huracana.
Oh,
they
yeah.
do Huracana. They do the 125, and they also do. I did the 65 last year.
Okay.
It was a few weeks after Ironman, so when I completely even forgot that I had signed up for it. Like, do you remember Kat and Kev from Boston? They're like
yeah.
ultra athletes in their own
yeah.
right.
Yeah, I do remember them. Yes.
And Kevin also like quit smoking as well and got into this world of fitness. So I find your story is pretty
That's
similar.
Awesome.
In that regard, like, you know, he did it a lot later in life, and but just changed. You both have changed your lives, which is super inspirational. It's like, it's really cool to see. But anyways, they're ultra athletes, and they were like, you know, let's do this 65K. And Mark too. Do you remember Mark? He had the beard, and he ran Boston as well. He was from Montreal too.
Was he the guy who's always having like the Sealy hat on?
Yeah, exactly.
Totally. Yeah.
He's like the poster boy for.
Have they picked him up as a sponsor yet? I mean, like, come on.
I think they work pretty closely.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay, so you guys were all out there. Okay, but, so you've done on like what is 65K? I mean, that's like 40-ish miles almost.
Yeah, and anyways, it was one of these things like I forgot that I'd signed up, and it was like, hey, it's gonna be this fun weekend. We're gonna go have beer, and Mark was giving me shit because I bought a new pair of trail shoes because I don't run trail. I run on the road.
Sure. You know?
But yeah, it was interesting to say the least.
Would you do it again?
But that race, it's a good question. I think you know, it was really muddy.
Okay.
And I think that's what really made it, not that I'm scared of the mud or anything, but like, I like to run freely without any like mud pits or anything like that to have to face, you know?
Totally.
So that's where in road running, like you're running on asphalt. There's, for the most part, they're pretty clean and everything like that. So, but I think I would try it again. I think at a certain point I'm going to get, you know, past the marathon phase and want a little bit more, like as it's gone, for sure.
Sure.
but it's hard to say. You know, it's one of those things, like, when you look at, I'm sure you used to do the same, where you look back on your journey, and it was like, you know, I started doing a charity 10K, and then it turned into half marathons, and then 3 years ago, because I wanted to do triathlon and Ironman, that's why I did my first marathon. You know, it's like...
Was your first marathon in a triathlon?
No, okay. that's why I did, okay, Toronto Waterfront, was because I wanted to know what a marathon felt like before I actually did it in the Ironman.
Oh, that would probably be a good idea.
Right? Like, you don't want your first one to be in a triathlon. Like, forget it, you know? Like, you want to see what that kind of feels like. But
So when we met at Boston, was that like your only like your third marathon then, or
that was my second?
Your second. Okay.
I qualified with my first marathon, which is, yeah.
Oh, you're one of those people. Okay.
it was just surreal. Like, really, you go into every race, I think, with a strategy and an idea of what you want to do. So I just said, okay, my time's 3:05. I'm going to try and hold, I think it was 4:15 per kilometer, okay, and just see how it goes. I was fit for triathlon. So I said, you know what, why not? And it ended up turning out, like you say, I met somebody mid-race. They were trying to do sub-3. I said, okay, I'll try and hang on. And next thing I know, I'm crossing the finish line. I'm qualified, you know? So it was really, really special. That's like something I'll never forget for sure.
Yeah. So what was your first marathon time then?
2:58. Yeah. <That's> yeah. Awesome. Yeah. It's, but yeah, how I, like I say, like looking back, it's like, I don't know how do you get there? You know what I mean? Like,
well, were you pretty athletic like in high school and thereafter? Or?
I mean, yeah, I was. I think similar to you, I always wanted to stay. I wanted to stay in shape. I always liked running. Yeah. I wasn't the best at running by any means, but I was always a go, go, go kind of kid. I played soccer and stuff like that.
Yeah. Get into the mode, you know, go into beast mode. Don't talk to anybody, whatever. But I mean, like if you're me, like, and if there's like another one of me out there, it's like have fun and enjoy it. So, it was good to go to a race actually and not run and just be a part of that community, because you kind of, it helps solidify again or re-solidify. Like, it's like, yeah, you know what? I do like just being out here. And that's a big part of it. It's like the race is sometimes secondary. It's like, it's the people, it's the atmosphere. Like you said, it's the places you get to go. Like, that's for me, the real fuel. So, it was definitely, it was good to go do that, but yeah, it's a huge, huge part of it.
I completely agree with you there. Like 100%. And Kat and Kev, we're friends, you know, I met them three years ago and we're still friends. But that's one thing they always taught me. And something we always do in training is have fun. And it kills me to run a race like Boston. Like I ran back the next year and so did some other people that I knew. And a lot of what I heard was like, I want to go back and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God. Like, you never get your first back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you never get your first anything back. And let alone like a special race like Boston is. Like, I remember it was pretty hot that day.
It was really hot.
It wasn't, I mean, that was not my best by any means, but I at 10K, I think I said, like, forget it. Like, I'm going to high five like every kid along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna make this like the best day it can possibly be. I don't care about the time. I'm throwing it out the window. I've made it.
Totally. Yeah. And that's the right. I mean, that's really the right way to go about it, because it's like, you can run another fast marathon. Like, you will run another fast marathon. And truthfully, you probably haven't even run your fastest marathon yet. So why ruin being there to, you know, it's like, why? Just do it. You just be out there and have fun. I mean, that's how I was. I was coming off 100K the week before, though, which was my fault. But yeah.
Because you're an animal?
Well, because I, you know, it was always like some, like, you know, personally ill-advised, like, we could do this. Like, yeah, let's do this. Like, it might matter, but it doesn't. But I mean, yeah, I remember, I think I held on for like maybe like 15 miles or like 16 miles. I like kept it at like a seven, you know, I was probably trying to aim for about a 3 hour pace. And then I just like completely blew up and I was like, you know what? Like, we're going to hang back. We're going to, yeah, same thing. We're going to slap hands. We're going to check out the towns that you're running through because it's so cool out there. Like, it's so quintessential. Like, if you think about East Coast USA, like, it's just all of that.
Yeah, it's a great town, great city, amazing support.
Oh, it's, yeah. It's,
for anybody who's qualified and isn't sure, like, that's another thing that kills me. It's like, they're qualified, but they don't know if they want to go. It's like, dude. Like, you have to go.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah.
You must go. Yeah.
Okay. Literally, again, my
people die to, like, oh, kill themselves to be able to run that race. And it's like.
So, yeah. My neighbor here, right next door, like, just met him, like, literally. He just moved in, like, last, probably, like, almost a year ago. And or a little bit more than because he had already run Chicago. So literally, like, guys moving in, like, I'm wearing my Chicago Marathon t-shirt from last year. And he's like, oh, yeah. Like, he's like, I ran that. Like, I was there. I'm like, oh, my God, it's such a small world. We start connecting. And then, like, basically it's like, I'm like, so he's like, yeah, that was my first marathon. I'm like, wow, dude, congratulations. I'm like, what'd you run? He's like, 2:34. I'm like, okay. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, like, that's pretty good. Like, not,
yeah,
but like ultimately where he's at right now is like, and we were out having beers a couple nights ago, you know, he's got some serious talent, you know, he's gonna be, you know, a very competitive runner. Like, he wants to go Olympic trials qualifier, so he hired a coach, but his coach is like, don't go run Boston in April. And I was like, that is the worst advice. I'm not a coach. That's the worst advice I've ever heard. I was like, go run Boston. You've got the qualifier easy, but like, why wait? You know, like, what things happen, dude. Like, I'm not wishing him bad by any means, but it's like, you know what? Like, you could blow a knee out. You know, you might never run again one day. Like, don't sacrifice the opportunity when it's just, it's right there for you. All you got to do is enroll. So I was, you know, giving him some crap. I was like, dude, you better sign up.
You better do that.
It's like, you have no idea what you're missing. Like, just go do it. It's, yeah, it's life changing.
Because we're lucky to be there, you know, that you gotta be grateful to be there and be humble about it. And it's, I'll go back. I want to keep going back for years and years to come.
Oh, now, so. Totally. Yeah. And you know what, you made a good point. You know, we're lucky to be there. And I think that's, a differentiation to make where it's like, instead of saying like, you know, I can run or I'm going to run, it's like, I get to run, you know? And I think there's a large difference in how you say that, because it's true. It's like, I get to do this. Like, there are a lot of people who don't have these opportunities. And that's, you need to be fortunate just right then and there and say, you know what, the fact that I can even, I'm battling, but you know, I'm like sitting here, and that was my rationale. You know, I was like, at least for when I was DNFing in the 100, was like, you know what, I got to do this. There's people who will never be able to do this. The fact that I'm dropping out of a 100-mile race, like, is, you know, it's enough for me. For now.
Right. You're not alone, right? Like, the UTMB happened last week. Ooh. You know, in France. Was that it?
Yeah. That race, just 8 people alive this year.
Right?
Oh, my God.
And, like, the best of the best in the world showed up, you know, and put their best foot forward. No pun intended.
And, no, I like it.
And, you know, like you're saying, like, even the best out there, they have their struggles too. You know, it's just one of these things, like, that at that distance.
Oh,
you know, you take what you can on the day and one step at a time, and you hope for the best, and that's all you can do. Really.
Yeah. A lot of things have to go right, you know, and consecutively and for a while too, you know, you just need things to come together. And yeah, that race this year, that was honestly one of the most exciting races that I had watched, because I was like, Kilian Jornet, like, dropped. Like, one of our hometown heroes here. His name's Zach Miller. Like, he dropped. And then, like, Jim Walmsley, another, like, huge, huge name. He dropped. And you're just like, who is even left? You know, and, like, every time I would, like, flip my Twitter on or you know, be looking at, you know, anybody casting, they're like, yeah, you know, so-and-so's DNF. And I'm like, it just felt like it was a tough year. I mean, they dealt with a ton of weather. And, I mean, it's a tough course as it is, but to be doing it in the pouring rain, it's just like, it's totally nuts.
Yeah, for sure. No, absolutely. And I guess, how are you liking Colorado? I wanted to ask you that too. Like, I know you moved there a few years ago, like, and you just mentioned, you know, you have some, I mean, these places like Flagstaff, Colorado, yeah, these are hubs for runners. They go there to train and stuff like that. Like, there's training camps and stuff. Do you get to connect? You know, first of all, like, how is the difference between Chicago and Colorado?
Yeah.
Like, how are you liking the living lifestyle? Like, why did you choose that as a destination?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the answer was, is it was a lifestyle choice. I mean, Chicago's a great city. I love Chicago. I'm even homesick days. But nobody in Chicago, I mean, few people, I should say, in Chicago really can identify with you and you identify with them, where it's like, I like to do all these things. And people in Chicago are kind of like, what? Like, what do you do? Like, like, and then whereas out here, you know, everybody does it and everybody's in it. And if somebody doesn't run, they're a badass climber or they're a badass mountain biker or they're an insane skier. So everybody's kind of in that outdoor lifestyle mindset where it's like, well, even if you're not an ultra runner, you're an ultra something, you know, and definitely can connect with a lot more people. I will say that being out, I mean, first of all, we're so fortunate. It's beautiful. You need to come visit. I have an extra room for you whenever you want. But it's just, we're so lucky because you can get into the big mountains and you can get up at elevation. You can just see some of the most beautiful places ever. And, you know, we're spoiled now. But I think that the other part of that is that there are a lot of really, really good athletes out here. So what happens is it's like, you know, I don't finish Leadville. And while I'm not finishing Leadville, there's some guy who is like finishing his 20th Leadville in a row or something, like something insane like that.
Unbelievable.
So, you know, you are thrown onto the spectrum of athletes in Colorado. And, you know, more often than not, you're falling somewhere along the lines of it's like, oh yeah, you run a marathon. Big deal. Like, I've run 400 marathons or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like,
just something ridiculous.
I mean, yeah, there's crazy athletes. So it's not necessarily demoralizing, but it can be, but it's also like inspirational. Like, whoa, like not only are these people doing these incredible things, but like they're right here. Like, I see these people. And then like the community is filled with a lot of, you know, impeccable athletes where like these guys, you know, like Tony Kropitschka and, you know, a lot of the other local runners like Zach Miller and all these people who are like, you know, in our subculture, like I was talking about earlier, who are like in your eyes, like very, very famous. Like, you know, you run into them in bars and stuff and you're like, oh, hey, that's cool. Like even Scott Jurek, I just got
his book as a gift.
Oh, North or Eat and Run?
Eat and Run.
Oh, so good, Eat and Run, by the way. That was a very influential book for me. But like Scott and his wife Jenny and me and Hannah are friends. Like, we see them all the time. And like, we've had, you know, like they're always in town. It's like, oh, hey, Scott. Like, he was up in Montana. I saw him at Leadville. Like, we just see him at like Trader Joe's and the grocery store and stuff. So like, you have that too, where it's like you're in it kind of. And it's fun. And it kind of fuels the adventure then, because you're like, we're here, we're doing it, it's all accessible. And the amount of things that you can do too, like all you have to say is like, I want to go run on a trail. Then there's like 4,000 miles of trail or some insane amount of trail. It's like, pick one.
Which direction?
It's great. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I could ever leave it. I've thought about it already. Like, maybe I go back to Chicago, but it's too pretty. There's too much. It's too much fun. I feel like a kid. It's like a playground.
Yeah. Sounds like inner paradise. I did. And I also find it interesting, like, as a you're pretty established runner yourself, like the comment you made about you almost feel like not good enough. It's cool. Like, it's cool when athletes are nice and humble about it, and they, you know, you can talk to them and stuff like that. But you get that sometimes in, like, you know, local run communities, like, that aren't so run focused or activity focused, like Montreal. You know, Montreal is a great run city, I find. And you're constantly trying to get people out and to join your group. And I can see, you know, even for me joining a group, it was intimidating, but I'm not even close to around the athletes that you guys are, you're exposed to over there. So on a different level, it's kind of like intimidating, but always reaching out and immersing yourself in that culture kind of opens those doors too, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's intimidating, but I think it's motivating. It's kind of like unintentionally pretentious in a way where, you know, nobody's out there being like, oh, like, look at all the cool stuff I did. But it's kind of like, it's just there, and it's just knowledge, or it's even like assumed knowledge about any one person. It's an interesting, like, sociological landscape out here, you know, and it's probably a whole nother conversation for another time, but
right.
Like, there's such a huge cross section, you know, there's like students and there's like young professionals, I guess, if you want to call it, like me and Hannah, and there's like older, all is like, and really established people with like families or even retirees, but everybody is always getting out and doing something. So you just start to pick up on what all those things are. And I don't know, it presents itself in a very obscure way, or at least a very unique way, I should say. Obscure is probably not the right word. And I think it was different than in Chicago, because in Chicago it was like, okay, here's the run club, like, this is what we got to do, like, blah, 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 blah. And that's not a bad thing, because I've been a part of, I mean, I'm in a run club out here, but it's like, sometimes your goals start to become bigger than one run or one race or any of that. And I think that's, you know, that's really where I've kind of gravitated to now, where it's not so much about the race as it is just being out in the mountains all the time. Mm-hmm. And there are all these unsanctioned, quote unquote, like, loops and all these runs that you can do that are as challenging, like, you know, and if you want to ever go look this up, and if you ever come out here, I'll take you. There's one very, very distinct loop. It's called the Four Pass Loop. It's out in Aspen, Colorado. It goes through the Maroon Bells, which I think if you've ever seen a picture of Colorado, like, you've probably seen the Maroon Bells. It's like extremely picturesque.
Right.
So there's this 27, 28-ish mile loop, and it goes over four mountain passes. Again, you know, like a big day, probably like, you know, 3,000 meters, or like 2,800 meters a climb. And, but again, it's like, you can put all of your effort in and just go do that. And it's as rewarding then, because it's like, you're out there on this loop, which I think I did it not this year, but last year. And like, there's people who are backpacking it in like 3 days.
Right.
And you're like, yeah, we're going to do this in 7.5 hours. Like, we're going.
We're doing this in a work day.
I mean, seriously. Yeah. And it's crazy. And then you look up like these guys, like Tony Kropitschka, and like another, he's a marathoner too, like Sage Cannaday. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
No.
These guys are out there doing what I'm doing. Like, we did the Four Pass Loop, I think, in like right at like about just under 8 hours, like 7:50 something, I think is what we ended up at. There's these guys doing it in 4.5 hours, just crushing it.
Yeah.
Crushing it. And you're like, well, that's cool.
Good for you, buddy.
Good job. Like, I'm not doing that, but, so yeah, you know, I think you can gravitate, towards some of those things. And like, I'm getting the opportunity this year. I'm going to go run the rim to rim to rim in the Grand Canyon.
Oh, dude, man, don't tell me that. I want to know.
You could come. I've got, my buddy's got a campsite for like 30 people or something crazy like
that. When are you doing it?
I think it's going to be the third weekend in October.
Oh yeah. I'm running in the waterfront marathon the 21st.
Oh,
Yeah, I would have loved to do that.
All right, we'll just have to go back then.
Yeah,
exactly. We're just, well, you know, let's like we could just go do the ultra Huracan. Was it the 125K?
Oh,
come
no,
on, man. We go. But see, like that's the thing. Like Canada's got some like other crazy races. Like you know, Fat Dog. You know about that one?
No.
Okay, Fat Dog 120 or 125.
I'm out of the trail game here.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm like always like, dude, there's one of the hardest ultra marathons is in BC and okay. It's called Fat Dog 120 or 125. I can't remember what
I can see that for sure.
Okay. It's gnarly. It's ungnarly. My buddy did it, but yeah, dude, we'll snap off a couple trail runs or we can go run Squamish always 50K.
Yeah. I'd love to get back. I'd love to go and do another one. I think I do enjoy being out in nature and I run Mount Royal all the time, which is it's right in the middle of the city. It's a mountain, right here, really close to us, about 2 or 3 K from my place.
Okay.
It's just great for training or we'll go up to Tremblant, which is it's up north. It's just a ski resort, like nowhere near the kind of mountains that you guys have.
But you get some, some climb though. Yeah.
Get some climb. Yeah, exactly. So,
okay.
You know, it is some good training, but yeah, I definitely want to get, I'd like to get back in the trail game, but,
I'll infect you.
Maybe it'll take some, a little bit of pushing, but we'll get there. But certainly doing that rim to rim to rim, like we'll have to talk again, have you back on to kind of like go through that experience. I know Kat and Kev have done that twice. They've done it twice. Awesome. So yeah, it's like mental, but I'm super jealous about that.
I'm pretty excited for it. So yeah, I'll report back.
Is that next for you? Are you doing Chicago? Chicago's October too, no?
Yeah, so Chicago's first weekend of October, and then I'll do rim to rim to rim, and then that'll probably cap it for the year, I think, for me. Trying to reassess some goals right now. I need to get my butt in the gym. That's pretty much been my biggest weakness, where it's like everything from my waist down is in incredible shape, but everything from the waist up kind of looks like I've had a couple extra muffins. So.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, just trying to like hit the weights a little bit more, and I'm trying to cross train a little bit. I think I've had just like some hangering like injuries, just stuff that's just like it's not taking me out of the game, but I don't feel 100%. So trying to get strong, trying to ride the bike. That's been my other big thing that I've been doing. We have those, you know what like those Peloton spin bikes are?
Right,
We've got those at our gym in our apartment complex, so I've been on that thing as much as I can. But yeah,
good idea.
Tell me, because obviously you ride often. I mean, how do you feel cross-training? Do you feel like it breaks it up for you? Or like, I mean, tell me a little bit more about how it helps.
Yeah, I did notice that this year, because this year I took a step back on the triathlon side, so I did a lot less riding. It was really run focused. But one thing I'll say for sure is that runners need to cross train. It's vital. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just some like basic exercises at home, it's something that every runner needs to do. It makes such a huge difference in recovery and just building like those stabilizer muscles in your legs. Like, you know, we're so hard on our ankles and knees and, you know, hamstrings and, you know, glutes. So it really does make a huge difference in that respect. And I certainly notice it when I do it on the norm.
Yeah.
But it's something that every runner needs to do. And it does help overall with just like longevity in the sport, you know, for sure.
Definitely. Yeah.
I mean, and the biking too, I should say. Sorry to cut you off there.
No, sorry.
But it does, because, you know, when you're doing the bike, it hardens the legs on those long climbs, and it really helps you in the marathon running, especially like later on. It just gives you that extra jump in your fitness, that extra pop that you need to kind of really push through. But I didn't get that this year, but definitely the cross training 100% certainly nice. Helps quite a bit. Yeah, so I highly recommend it for sure.
Nice. So you've got, so you have New York coming up?
No, I'm going to do that in 2019.
That's next year. Okay. Yeah. So what do you got on tap? What's your schedule look like?
I've been on like on a 16 week training program for Toronto Waterfront. So I'm going to try and crush that, October 21st. So
that's the A race for you then this year?
Yeah. And not even to qualify for anything. Cause I did that this year. I qualified for Boston in Boston. So that was a huge step.
It's a weight off your shoulders for sure.
Yeah, you don't have to wait till the end of the year, which is quite nice. Actually, registration's today. For next year. So, but yeah, I got Toronto, and then I'm done for the year and kind of gear up for Boston again. Sometime I guess in January, and then kind of go from there. Get back into that winter running. You know,
totally. But so will you take an extended period of time off of running? Like, will you completely leave it ever?
Probably not. I'd say no. Okay. At triathlon, definitely. I take a break because the fatigue stays in your bones. But that's how I explain the kind of pain that you go through afterwards. Like, you feel okay physically, but it's really like this the soreness that you have, this overall body soreness that you have like later on. But I don't find the same with the marathon so much. So recovery time's a lot quicker, and you can kind of get back into it slowly, you know, nothing crazy, short distance stuff, just to move the legs, and it's quite good.
So like full Ironman, how long are you recovering for? Like 2 months after that or less?
I'd say it's like a month. I'd say it's a good month, and then you can start up again, you know, just like again, just slowly biking or like easy runs, like little, you know, 3-5K runs just to keep things rolling. So
nice.
Yeah. So that's kind of how it looks for me, and yeah, really looking forward to that. So,
well, we definitely should sync up on something, whether you come out here or I need to come up there. But let's like, or if we meet somewhere and do a race, it would be a blast. I mean, anything really. I don't know. I mean, road race, trail race, whatever.
I know
it'd be fun.
It's a long time coming, Scott. Like, we've been talking about it for so long, and
I know. But you know what? But we kept in touch, though. That's the important part. You know, we kept chatting, and that's vital.
Absolutely. And we'll continue to do that for sure.
Yeah, dude. Absolutely. I'll find something stupid to do that.
I want to hear about that rim to rim run that you're going to be doing. So we'll definitely touch base in a little bit. I want to ask you, anywhere you want to be followed, like you're interested in sharing like what you're up to, like Instagram or anything like that?
Oh man, yeah, I get to plug myself.
Yeah, why not? I'll give you a shot here.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, dude. Okay, so yeah, I'm on Instagram at the Ultra Vegan. It's my handle. That's pretty much my main source. I'm on Facebook. Y'all can find me if you really want to see me. But Instagram, yeah, just a lot of food stuff. So you know, I try and post up recipes or at least food ideas and stuff like that. And then a lot of mountain pictures. Just all the adventures are pretty much documented. So yeah, thanks, dude.
There's a lot of that, yeah, for sure, which is super interesting.
I think so, yeah, I don't know. We're just, what Instagram's not showing is, like, all the beer drinking. Yeah. It's like, yeah, this amazing run we did on, we were so hungover for.
Right, it's like, all the good stuff all the time.
Right, just the choice pieces of it all, but yeah, that's sweet, man, thanks.
Awesome, yeah, well, Scott, like, really appreciate having you on today, like, I know there's a time difference for us, you know, between Montreal and Colorado, but it's, you know, a long time coming. You come from a hell of a background, and good luck with everything coming up.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, I appreciate it. Well, let's definitely keep in touch. Let's definitely chat again soon, and let's race. I mean, I'll drag you through something. Okay. Let's
100%. I'm in.
I love it, dude. I love it, man.
I'll pace you at Leadville next year.
Yeah. We'll talk about that. You know what I need you to get me tuned up for another like sub-3 marathon.
There we go.
That's really what I need.
We'll do the Boston, the 125.
The Boston what? The
125th, Boston? Yeah.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah. Well, you know what we can do? We can do quad Boston.
The possibilities are endless, Scott.
We'll brainstorm.
Absolutely. All right, Scott. Well, thanks again for being on, and take care.
Yeah, I'll talk to you soon, buddy. Have a great one.
Appreciate it. Bye.
All right, later. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Movember, a cause that is most recognized for its mustache but has evolved into so much more. In fact, you don't even need to grow a mustache to participate. Keep your beard, grow or don't. The most important thing is raising awareness to fight the four main causes: mental health, suicide prevention, prostate cancer, and testicular cancer. Getting involved is easy. Sign up or donate at Movember.com to help change the face of men's health.
Thank you for joining us on this week's episode of The Rundown. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at WRGRuns. and let us know what you think using the hashtag Low Rundown. Low Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in downtown Montreal. Produced and recorded by Andrew Ward. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi, with assistance by Mark Grimberg. Marketing by Joe Garcia, and hosted by me, Justin Pugliese. We hope you enjoyed our show. Now take what you've learned and run with it.